Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to a new redefining technology podcast. Standing on 2 feet, having dexterous hands, developing a language that allows us to communicate, and the ability to understand abstract concepts. These are all part of the equation of humanity. Still, it is the capacity to create tools and advance the technology that has allowed us to thrive on this planet, and maybe on others. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com.
Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net.
Marco.
Sean, have you seen AI lately?
I have, and it's very smooth.
It is. Really cool. Got a swag. Yeah. Have you seen it like in the street, like walking around?
It's like Fabio.
Well, we go back in the 80s all the way.
Yeah,
oh my God. You're gonna have to put a link here for people that are not as old as we are. But we're talking about AI today, and we got to define it a little bit because it's like nobody probably has seen it, except for you, of course.
For me, and perhaps somebody who's seen it, they just don't know it, and maybe it's impacted the way they do their job. Maybe it's changed how they view certain things in their little pocket of society, or perhaps it's even changing how we think globally. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And with the definition of what it is and how it should work, perhaps there's a way forward without it. Perhaps it's chaos. And I think that's what we're going to talk about here.
That's what we want to avoid, because there's one thing for sure, Sean. You may not have seen AI, but I'm pretty sure AI have seen you in a way or in another. So we need to be sure that it's behaving and it's doing what we want to do, and not just find ourselves carried by technology, as often happen. And that's what we usually discuss in redefining technology. But today we put more of a societal spin to it. And of course, Sean, what do we know?
We know nothing, as you can tell from this intro. But we have some great guests with us who know all the things AI.
Everything.
And I'm going to put all the pressure on them to bring us all the answers today. And of course, I'm joking with that. But in all seriousness, this is an important topic. And we can go far and wide with this. We'll see where we take it. I'm thrilled to have John Froebel and Adit on with us. I'm going to pass the ball to John to say a few words. John's been on the show before. It's great to have John back. And he brings with him Froebel and Adit to talk about AI. John, a few words about what you're up to at Enterprise Ireland, and then pass the ball to Froebel, if you would, please.
No problem at all. Sean, great to be back again and talking about another topic. My current role in Enterprise Ireland is I'm involved in a new client digitalization unit, which is focused on looking at adopting digital technologies within Irish industry and helping them to adopt them and scale rapidly and use those technologies. And obviously, fundamental AI is a real new opportunity for businesses to give it new opportunities, to help with efficiencies, to help with new products and services. And so as part of that, we're very much looking to see how we're going to help our client base here in Ireland with the companies, both small and large, to be able to leverage AI right across on that. And so at the moment, that's really where my focus is looking at embedding AI into Irish industry on this side of it. And so I'll pass over to Fergal now.
Hi there. My name is Fergal Finn. I work for Ireland's National Standards Body, the National Standards Authority of Ireland. And I manage a small team of officers whose portfolio is based on ICT, innovation, policy, and business development. And AI is one of the emerging technologies or disruptive technologies that we're standardizing right now. And Aditya works with me on that team.
Hi, thanks, Fergal. Hi, everybody. I work on the AI portfolio of standards at international and European level. You're working in National Standards Authority with Fergal. And I do bring in some experience of having actually worked on AI solutions and seen them work in real life of corporates and of people and government. So I'm pretty excited that now, having seen the commercial side, how do standards and policy help AI work for the benefit of everybody?
I love it. And so we have two groups represented here with a focus on developing what AI looks like in business and society from a local level within Ireland. And then how organizations can embody and embrace and use that technology. So I want to stay focused with Ireland for the moment. We'll go global later. How do the two groups work together to, let's say, define policy and apply policy in a way that matches what Ireland cares about, and then ultimately the broader view? So I don't know who wants to take that. John, you want to roll with that first?
Yeah, I can start off with that. No problem, Sean. So initially what we approached from an Ireland perspective was what we called the National AI Strategy, and that was launched earlier this year. And that took together a view right across Ireland under different sectors, looking at both industry, society, and within that. And then the different agencies within Ireland came together to work collaboratively on this and feed into it. And one of the big pieces with that is in Enterprise Ireland is very much focused on indigenous industry and helping them export abroad. And then NSAI, with Fergal then as well, they came on board to run with a top team that focused on standards on AI. And very much we work collaboratively in this piece with national policies. As agencies, we work together quite closely, a lot of collaboration. And in particular in these emerging areas such as AI, there's a lot of synergies where things cross over now as it's coming in. And we would see a lot of opportunities too for business now looking at particularly embedding standards into their products earlier on. We've seen success like this before in the telecoms and early stage adapters of standards where they really get a competitive advantage. And so there's a lot of kind of shared interest here between the standards and also product development in that piece. So we work collaboratively on that.
Yeah, and Fergal, I want to go to you because I called it policy. And I don't know if it is really policy or as John described, standard. And you have a top team for standards. Tell me what that is. The top right. Team for standards. And is it policy or is it something different?
It's a pilot scheme. So the Irish government looked at a number of technologies that they wanted to fast roll into Ireland. Okay. And the pilot scheme that they chose for AI was what they call a top team. So that basically means that we bring together a small group of people. Ours is about 30 people or so. Of high caliber, highly experienced influencers in Irish industry and society that could put together in a document a set of recommendations to the Irish government on how we can get AI onto the island fast, effectively, and sustainably. And that's from the point of view of the researchers that we have in academia, the small startups that we have developing AI product right now from grassroots. We then are looking at your everyday kind of a company, how they can digitalize themselves, how they can embrace AI to make themselves better, faster, more productive. And then the Irish society, how do we win Irish society over in such a way that they're happy to use AI and would be happy that instruments that the government roll out that are powered by AI, that they trust the Irish government with its use of AI. So it's basically the A to Z of AI in Ireland, you know. We have a great reputation in the academic side of things for developing AI and a big focus on trustworthiness and ethics. But on the ground, we don't have a fantastic reputation because we don't talk about it. We don't tell people what we're doing. And some of the multinational companies that we home here in Ireland, they've said, Irish government, you really need to start singing about the work that you have here, the talent that you have here, the English speaking base, the type of people who naturally bring trustworthiness and ethics to their workplace. You don't have to teach them. They're just born with it. These fantastic attributes that are accelerators for AI, you need to boost that reputation internationally. So that's what we're trying to do is bring together a set of recommendations that we can bring to the Irish government and say, this is the list of things you need to do to roll AI out onto this island.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it makes me think, and maybe Adith, we can talk about that, on how we have this ideal of what AI can be, can do, and how we think it should behave. And then we need to break it down to how are we sure that it does behave the way that we want to? And what if the way we want to is not the right way? And how we put it together from different cultural and perspective. And as you mentioned, Fergal, there is the trustworthiness of it, but also, you know, it has to have a function for the business and for society. So what it does and how it does it is how you put it together. So, Adith, I would love your perspective and your experience. Apparently, you're the one that have seen AI, actually.
Yeah, I mean, if AI can be seen. like the very definition of AI, AI can be sensed. So if I were to define AI, I would say a system that acquires knowledge and then uses it, because that is the thing that distinguishes it from the traditional computing. Traditional computing is rule-based. You provide rules, it gives you output. AI acquires knowledge and then you can leave it alone. And I know that sentence can cause a bit of red flag, but you don't leave it alone. You have to supervise it. But once it acquires knowledge, it can use that knowledge to do things that you believe it should do. You can teach it like a child and it will mature up in that particular domain. So that is how I define AI. And having said that, I would say that giving the right knowledge, just the way you teach child the right thing to do, give him a moral compass and a knowledge compass. Similarly, when you start building an AI system, if you give correct knowledge and you give a correct moral compass, you can then be sure that the system will behave properly and behave for the benefit. So that is how I think AI systems should be built and regulated. So the key thing is providing that right knowledge.
Now, I want to get, I don't know who has this perspective, but so there's data that can be used to create information with some algorithms, perhaps machine learning, that creates knowledge that feeds AI systems. I don't know if I'm oversimplifying or messing that up or not, but that's kind of my view of it. And I'm wondering, do we need to have controls in place for who has access to data sets, who can feed data sets, who controls algorithms, who can build AI systems, who can embed existing AI systems and use the data. So I see this mix of multiple entities involved here. And so how do we keep that picture clear and concise so that we know this data set, these algorithms, this system produces this output, and that's all okay?
Well, not only that, but if you can connect to what I said before, it's like could be okay for you,
right,
or a certain culture may be not okay for another culture. So how do we put that together just to make more complex things a little bit? So I think we could do a round on this because I would love each perspective on it. Yeah. John, you go.
Okay. So I guess from my side, it's a really interesting debate with this that we look at. So there's two things, particularly access to data. And this is really interesting. If you're a startup company, getting access to data can be quite hard to train your AI. So that's a challenge that comes in there. And then you've got the larger multinationals or large companies who might have loads of data that's there. And obviously, there's a competitive advantage for them, because they have that and they can train their AI that goes with it. So that's one thing about the equity of fairness around access to AI and or access to data, which can then help AI. And of course, if you can't train it and you don't have access to it, then you're at a disadvantage already. And so does that limiting, you know, does that limit competitiveness? So that's one piece that we would look at particularly in there. The other piece then around then is very much too, as we're starting to see the rollout now of AI services on the different cloud providers, you know, and so now with a 2 or 3 lines of code, you can connect in, call an API, do something like a customer churn model, put it in there and through the code. Now, the question is, does the coder who's doing that, do they understand what the AI is doing, or they're just feeding something in and pulling it down? So there can be a value add to the business because now the AI services are readily available and you can build them into your product very quickly, which is great. But then is the risk is, do you understand what that was trained on, or do you understand where it came from? And so we've seen multiple issues, ethical around this, about using AI in law and as having biases that are in there. All of these different challenges come up, and culturally, there's different biases that can come in. And so that is a really, really complex area. And I think we're going to start seeing that evolve over time about the access to data. I know the European Union is very interested in this in particular because they really want to develop the AI that's in there and the trustworthiness that goes with it. And the big focus we are now seeing coming in is this whole area of explainable AI. And I think this is going to be really core when you're looking at like the regtech industry and particularly in healthcare, where you're going to be start making recommendations or suggestions, like that the people have the trust that is there is the first thing, but also being able to explain how the machine came to those recommendations will be very important. So I think we're going to see a big focus, particularly on that whole area of explainable AI and what that means, because people will want to know what it did it. Where's the data that it was trained on? Did it factor in areas of bias or whatever might be relevant to where it is? So there are big challenges that are coming down the road. But as you said, there's depending on where you are, what size company, where you're at in the journey, there's different challenges around access to data, the access to the AI, the access to the skills that goes around it as well, from both software developers and also from data scientists. So it's a real, real kind of a mix that's there, particularly from industry. So that'd be my view on that side of it.
It's a good view. Virgo, right. What's your view?
Yeah, I'm going to let Aditya talk about the standards point, the standards part of it. What I'll talk about is the European Union. So the European Union looked at AI and thought, you know, where are we going to go with this? You know, we're not going to do it the way the US are doing it or the Chinese are doing it. We want our own niche way because we want to bring a value to this. So they looked at their core values in the European Union, and they went with trustworthiness. And they have now developed a draft regulation on AI, which is centered around trustworthiness and explainability and controllability, bias. They're all part of the core
wording of the regulation. And what they've done is they've broken it into parts, and they have prohibited AI. So AI that is not allowed to be used in the European Union, and they have high-risk AI. And that high-risk AI is going to be it's going to require certification. And with that certification comes compliance. With compliance comes inspection. And then underneath that, there's high explainability and low risk. So they're the ones that aren't going to cost you a lot of money to develop from a certification point of view, but you'll be able to use them, but have to demonstrate traceability and transparency in that. So that's the core that's been driving AI in Europe, and the Irish government then has embraced that. When the regulation comes through, Ireland will enact that regulation on the island and adopt all those rules and regulations that come with it and the process. And early on in the process, well, we identified that standards were a key enabler for this controllability. Luckily enough, those standardization activities had already started. And this is the point that Addy is going to explain to you, the AI standards being developed internationally by ISO.
Yeah, so I think I'll take on John's point as well. The way industry works, luckily, there are so many parties involved in bringing something to your mobile phone or to your computer that by design, the industry has some built-in safety mechanisms, because the person who manufactures the chip, the person who designs the algorithm, or the party which brings the data for training, they are all different entities. In fact, the solution might be hosted on a cloud environment, which is a completely different entity, as John says, and then anybody could buy the APIs to exploit them and make their own decision-making system. So by design, it is not possible to easily influence the entire chain of things that bring together an AI solution. That being said, as Fergal said, the AI regulation in Europe takes this into consideration to define if multiple parties come together to make a product, where does the responsibility lie? To determine this responsibility, it would be most beneficial that standards are there, so that if tomorrow there is a question on if a car was driving correctly or not in an autonomous mode, you can check several things. Was the data for that geo properly cleaned and fed? Was the algorithm designed to do what it is supposed to do? And were there any ethicists on the team to determine what should happen in a case of emergency? So if there are standards that define data management, there are standards that define development and explainability, and there are standards for controllability, as in the moment when an autonomous vehicle needs to take a decision, how should it take that decision, or how it should hand over to a human being if there is one behind the steering wheel. If these standards are in place, not only will it be much easier to make a system that works coherently, it will be very easy to decide where does the responsibility for implementation lie in each phase, and how do you bring it together to make a product that you can then say, yeah, it is fit to use, it is good to use.
The question in my head, being European, but also been living in the US for 20 years, it's hard to put people to agree on something, right? So when we say
every day, Marco.
Yeah, exactly. But when you do, you know, like I said at the beginning, there is a lot of cultural differences. Although when it comes to ethics, they should be very universal approach to this. So how is the European community finding themselves right now? Can you give us maybe some concrete example of like, look, we all agree on this, but we may not agree so much on other things. Like, what are the main value that everybody is coming together and what are not? I'm thinking like cars, who is responsible if an accident happens, self-driving car, the owner of the car, is it the company that created the car, is the software that is embedded in the car, you know, like, just curious.
I think that's a perfect thing to highlight that difference. Like when an autonomous vehicle comes to a point, let's take a hypothetical problem that an elderly lady is trying to cross the street and there is a child playing on the pavement. And the car has to make a decision because it's not at that distance where it can brake safely. Now, depending on the society where the value of an elderly is more than a child or the value of child is more than an elderly, which could be a difference between an Eastern and a Western society, you can have differences. So that is a case where a consensus has to be formed. And luckily, I sit on these standards meetings. We feel that experts who come together to design standards look at the problem from a very scientific point of view, from a very practical point of view, and they generally agree that this is how controllability of an autonomous system should behave. This is how it should take decision when it has to, or it should hand over in such a way. There can be differences, and those differences, in spite of application of standards, might still occur at the point of implementation. Like, for example, after all these careful considerations, when you export that vehicle to another country and they then enhance the software on board chip of that engine, they might still make it compliant to their own mechanisms. And that is fine. But at least you as producer made your best effort to provide a vehicle that you considered ethical by international standards. So that has to be done. And that is, I would like to say, Marco, that is the case with almost everything. You can design an automobile in the best possible engineering intentions, but its emissions are decided by local country emission regulations. So, and they allow it to be less or more than what you designed it for. So those engineering differences would happen at the point of use.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And Fergal, I feel you want to jump in here. And so how deep can we get in terms of those specific scenarios where it's the vehicle making a decision which direction to go and how to function versus the bigger balance of we want to do this to be a strong nation in the world of AI and there's commercial value in that. And we want to tie ethics to it so that perhaps the ethics becomes part of the value, but we're trying to juggle how we deal with that in our own society in Ireland specifically or greater Europe. And so we want to be ethical. We want to be first to market. We want to provide value. Obviously a bunch of levers there. How do you make some of those calls?
What I will say about what we have in the process, which is our EU regulation, it has been, they have gone to such a wide stakeholder group and they have listened to everyone. They have groups represented from every country in the European Union talking. They've handpicked people. They've invited people in. They've gone to public consultations. I would have to say, given everybody the opportunity to feed into the regulation in the EU. And I think they've done that very fairly. And I think that is what's going to drive the consensus or the decision-making process in the right direction. And what I'll say about Ireland is as well, it took us a long time to develop our strategy. And that is because we spent our time talking to people, trying to understand. We talked to the policymakers, we talked to the guys on the ground, we talked to the people on the streets, we talked to so many different stakeholders to try and get this right. And when the decision comes about, is it going to be granny or the grandchild? You know what? You're not going to get me to answer that one, but
Marco will answer.
Yeah. Well, close my eyes and let the car decide.
Sean, I'll add one piece there, particularly on the business side. And as you like, it's really interesting you talked about that. Like, I think sometimes the perception is that if you take time to do ethics or you take time to do secure coding or things like that, that actually that delays you to market, and so you miss out in some degree. But actually what I've seen is kind of nearly the inverse of that, and I've worked with lots of startup companies along the way. And what sometimes you see is the companies who actually maybe take an extra 2 or 3 months before they launch, but they do security by design, they look at ethics, they build that into their product as a core, and they fundamentally think about scaling. What actually happens is that they can scale faster because they've designed it in such a way that as they're winning more and more business, they've thought of the questions through and they're designed the system so it's more secure and more ethical. And then they can build faster because they don't have to re-engineer and go back and do the product. So I do think, like, if companies are thinking about it in that way and they're startups and they're going, oh, look, I'll worry about security afterwards and I'll worry about the ethics afterwards, I would caution against that, because what tends to happen is you reach a point where all of a sudden, as you're about to scale up, people are asking you the questions and you haven't done it, and and all of a sudden you're losing out on bigger contracts and you can't take on stuff because you have to readdress all the things you've had before. And it actually makes the businesses sometimes level off. So actually, and then the other ones who are a little bit behind you, they come and they overtake you because they've got all of those things done, and then you can lose market share. So it is an interesting one. I think I've seen that come up. But actually, the experience is if you do it right and you start off, you might start off a little slower, but you're probably going to end up gaining in the medium term. So it's just a small observation I've seen myself, at least, on that.
Yeah, no, I love that, John. And I mean, we've seen some movement in the security space, if we make this parallel, in the concept of shared responsibility, where the idea is you might leverage a set of services and capabilities from another vendor or provider, and they've done the work to secure and become compliant with different regulations and standards, and then share that with the other organizations that use and embed those technologies. Do you see that same? And with that, I guess, comes some visibility, transparency of what's happening there. Do you see that same model taking place with this?
Yeah, I do. And we have some very interesting companies in Ireland starting to do little things around this, where they're developing bespoke AI solutions and it's addressing a customer's need. And then what they're able to do is then offer that as a service and plug it into companies' businesses. And so what you're doing here then is you're taking a very small piece of AI in that context, but it does something very well. They've done the security, they've done the compliance piece, and they're able to sell that then in and say, well, look, if you use our service, it does all of that compliance stuff for you. It does all of that security for you. We've got the ethical piece here, and here's our explainable framework and how it works. And what that does is that particularly particularly, I suppose, for a country like Ireland, where there's a lot of smaller companies selling into the larger global multinationals, right? And be them in China, be them in Australia, be them in the US, wherever around Europe. What you want to be able to do is if you're part of that supply chain, and I know we normally think of hard products as supply chain, but actually AI as a service now is part of that supply chain now. It's a product and it's a service that can be plugged and played in like a transformer or a chipset or things like that. It's nearly coming to that stage. And I think we're going to see that evolve. So yes, there's a big piece there with that. And if you're able to reassure your customers you're selling into, if you use my service, I address all of their concerns from you, they're going to buy from you than somebody who doesn't have that. And if you're trying to target particularly large multinational companies to offer a service, that's really a really, really strong selling point to get you in the door. And also then, it can also sometimes help to put you then on there. So for example, we take some of the cloud providers, let's take that example, and they offer these services now where you can call the services down. If you're able to get into their marketplaces and you're able to have your service available that comes down, and they can just say, oh yes, we've verified this, that it's there. You've now reached a global market with your product that's certified that it's secure, it's got explainable AI behind it, and it's on all of the major cloud platforms that they can plug it down and put it in. That's a very strong selling point now that you as a small company in the west of Ireland can all of a, or anywhere in the world for that matter, can all of a sudden appeal to a global marketplace to use your service with AI. So I think there's a lot of opportunities we're going to start seeing coming out of that. But basing it on standards and ethical pieces within that will be important for people to trust it. So I think there's a growing market in this space, definitely.
Well, I think that, as Sean, you brought the example of cybersecurity, and I think you can do the same thing here, pretty much, where you're saying, you know, what you apply to something, then it can be applied to something else, and it becomes a value for the business. So secure has become a value for the brand. If you do an AI that is not ethical, at a certain point, you're stretching and it's going to break, right? You're bending it too much. So I love this, the opinion of Fergal and Adith on this. How do you translate ethics at a higher level to ethics to be applied on a product for becoming a business and ultimately connecting with society at that point? We may not have seen an AI, but we have seen a product that is using AI.
Yeah. Any examples?
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about autonomous cars. I think healthcare was briefly touched on. But any examples where that connection's made?
I think talking on that implementation of ethics and other practices for trust, I would say also connecting with John's point that it's not necessary that making products profitability is one direction and the burden of applying ethics is another direction. They can go actually hand in hand. For example, if you are in a financial center like Singapore and you always give home loans to high earning people, your home loan portfolio is completely dependent on high earning financial industry workers. Suppose something happens to financial industry, your entire portfolio is at risk. So AI is that opportunity to think that you don't bias towards one thing, that your home loan process is fair and equitable, which actually makes your home loan portfolio safer. So in a lot of cases, when you develop products or services, AI will give you that opportunity to rethink your process in a more beneficial way. It's the same when we now think of AI systems screening people's CVs. So those traditional approaches of looking for particular keywords eliminate a lot of variety that can come through your door. So this idea that we can only do profitability or we can only make ethical things or trustworthy things or the two will have a hard time going together is probably not so right. And I think that will change once everybody realizes the value of doing it the right way.
And Fergal, your thoughts on this, connecting it to the business and ultimately to society, where do you see some things happening that perhaps couldn't before AI and standards and ethics come into play?
What we are working on in Europe is a suite of standards on ICT professionalism. So right now in ICT, you can be a computer scientist and get a degree in computer science. And or you can come from outside of that. You can come from social science, right? And become a programmer. And you can have different skill sets built up over the years with different experience, right? And your works have different characteristics. And what the European standards on ICT professionalism are trying to do now is to demonstrate and articulate or actualize what we haven't been able to actualize before when it comes to ICT skills. And that is an area where the ethics is going to play a role, and that you'll be able to almost measure it, you know. So I think that's something that is being developed that will make the life of the employer a lot easier when it comes to hiring highly skilled people, and you're looking for that ethical edge. That and secure data and reusing data.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this story. Yeah, interesting you mentioned the skill set, because I know there are some standards used in the U.S. where you get certified on them that don't just look at the tech stack and the ability to secure and maintain integrity of the data set, but they actually look at the processes and the people themselves. And that's going to be a critical element here, because we talked briefly before starting this journey today, and you kind of touched on it with the skill set and ethics being part of the training. You might have the best AI algorithm and system in the world, but if you have one engineer that's totally throwing wrenches in the works, ethically speaking, you could be in bad shape. It may not show up immediately, but certainly down the line. And I think having the skills and the training up front and the transparency there with that, I think, is critical.
But that's what Adi was saying there about so many steps in the process, that if you have one bad egg from an ethical point of view in the whole system, that's not going to crash the system. You know what I mean? I think in the end, we are good people. We want to create a good product. If we have a good product, we can make more money. And that in itself is going to drive ethics in AI.
Yeah. And if we do that, then society will benefit. I mean, if you try to do the bad thing, eventually it's going to damage everybody, and things going to have to change. And when I think about AI, and Sean, maybe we can close with this, is the idea that, and you guys have said this, is a way to look inside ourselves. For me, AI conversations are very philosophical. It's about, you know, ethos is about, you know, the almost, I don't want to go to the meaning of life, but the way society works, the way we decide things. And I don't know, Sean, for me, sometimes we expect too much maybe from AI at the stage it is now, like making those moral compass decision. Is like you go buy a car and you can have only the car if you answer correctly to what would you do as a driver if you find yourself in this situation. I don't know. I think in the end, AI is going to be way better than me making that decision.
I trust the AI. It's the human and the companies behind it. And I certainly don't want to go down this path, but there's a lot of news around a social media company that knew the impact of their systems, and they move forward developing and continuing to push those systems that are having an impact on young females in society. And I don't know, to me, that's where it all boils down. There's no transparency for that, no standards perhaps being followed there. I don't know, but that to me, it's less about the technology and the algorithm. It's more about the goal of the organization, the transparency and how they use those things.
And it's about maybe the society to be wrong to start with. And then we build bad AI because of that. So maybe this is a conversation for another time.
We're feeding the dragon.
Exactly. Well, I really enjoy this conversation as planned. I think there were actually some good answers that we can move with, some good plans, and look forward to see how things are moving. Because let's face it, we're still in the infancy of all of this. Being thirsty.
The fact that we're looking at it and talking about it and documenting it and exploring it is a huge, huge plus for me. And with that, Fergal and Adit, I want to thank you for sharing your top team and some of the things you're working on. And John, always good to see you. Thanks for helping bring this conversation together and bringing such great insight into this as well for Ireland and EU overall. To those listening, we'll include some links to some of the resources we touched on here, and keep thinking, and hopefully the AI will follow our thoughts and not create chaos. So thanks, guys.
Thanks a million, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Thank you, Sean. Thanks, Marco.
Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com.
Blue Lava is the first business platform for CISOs to manage their security program. Blue Lava guides security leaders to effectively measure, optimize, and communicate their security program with confidence and ease in one platform. Learn more at bluelava.net.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Technology Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.